So I guess a little bit about me. And before I begin, if what I have to say is just my opinion and my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, so if you don't agree with it and you don't like it, you can check out another AA meeting, or you could not listen. And second, you know, if this is your first AA meeting, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, and yeah. So a little bit about me. My first drink, I was 8 or 9. I was at my uncle's wedding, who was ironically at the time in recovery and still is, but they had champagne at the kids' tables, and you know, and it was just like this like weird thing where like I saw this like glass with this, you know, this yellow bubbly liquid, and I looked at my cousin Jenna, and I was just like we didn't even say anything, and we just like took the 8 glasses and we divvied it up 4 and 4 and drank as fast as we could, and I don't remember anything else from that night. You know, and that wasn't like, you know, like the beginning. Like that wasn't like, I didn't start daily drinking at that time. And before that point in time, you know, I've found out through my experience here that wasn't the first time that I tried to get out of myself. In fact, most of my life has been spent finding activities that I could find to get out of myself. Most socially acceptable, like when I was real younger, you know, when I first learned to read, I read any book I could to get out of myself, like Lord of the Rings. You know, I was, you know, characters in books, and I didn't have to live in reality. And I don't know. I mean, my home life was a home life. I had 2 parents and 2 younger siblings. My parents did the best they could with the knowledge that they had. You know, there's a lot of things that were lacking in my life, and that wasn't the reason why I drank. I don't believe that my alcoholism was conditional. It wasn't because of the family that I came from or my heritage or any of that stuff. Like, I have no explanation for my alcoholism. I just am. I don't know. Just progressed. The first substance that I picked up, it was like about a year after my first drink, my school and my parents deemed me in need of medication. So I started going to all these kinds of neurologists and doctors, and I was one of those ADHD kids, and they prescribed me Ritalin, about like a half a year, on that medication, I remember like reading the label, and it said take 1 daily, and I took 2, and 2 worked better than 1, and at that point in time, like my trust in doctors and labels stopped working, and I started this chemistry that didn't cease until I guess I got sober. I don't know. I mean, some of my fondest childhood memories are, being still short enough that you have to climb up onto the kitchen tables to get to the medicine cabinet, and like just going and reading, and like, you know, being like 10, 11, and just like not even knowing, like, I didn't know what I was taking most of the time, but like it just made me feel really secure walking to school with medication in my pocket. I didn't think that was a problem at all. Because it had my name on it. I don't know, I guess I did that for a while, until I was, you know, of the age of like 15 or so. The drink that I consider to be like my first actual drink, I was 15, I was on a varsity swim team, and the senior of the team was just like, hey, we're having a party at my house, yada yada yada, you should come. So I was like so excited. I've always been you know, this tomboy vagabond in all of my schools. I know that's a shocker. I don't know. I mean, like, I went to this really small high school, really, like, in a bubble. You know, I was the weird kid. I was, like, that token weird kid. And I didn't, like, hang out with a lot of people. So, you know, of course, like, when an older kid asks you to come hang out, like, you know, that's a huge deal. So I went to the party. I was, like, so excited. And I remember, like, planning for weeks. And then I got there, and, like, my parents, like, figured it out. They, like, called me home before, like, 11. I don't know, I just remember drinking, like, I had drank, like, 4 or 5 beers, and the kids that were my age drank the same amount as me, and they were, like, sloshed, and I wasn't, and I thought that was weird, but I just felt right, like, I just felt normal, and I didn't feel drunk, I just felt okay in my body, you know, so I ended up going home, and for the first time in my life, I had, like, a sane, rational conversation with my mother. Which was, like, what clicked in my head was, like, oh, it's, like, alcohol, like, it allows me to coexist with my parents. So, from that time on, I started doing it as much as I could. I led this, double life, if you will, where I was, like, this really good kid on the weekends, and, like, Monday through Friday was, like, my time. I spent most of my time in high school getting drunk and getting high in art class, and then just, I don't know, a few years after that, just stopped going and only went to the art classes. I don't know. I mean, like, it progressed it progressed from that Ritalin and the alcohol, like, just the, you know, the beer that I could find once in a while, essentially to pot. And then, is weird. It's the beginner's meeting. I'm like, oh, man. I guess to speak on my first step, like, where I was, like, really saw that I was powerless and, like, my life had become unmanageable, was, you know, the summer before I had gotten sober, and you know, I had barely graduated through high school. Actually, I hadn't even graduated from high school yet. I went to summer school, and by this time, like, I was a daily drinker, a daily cocaine user, daily pot smoker. You know, it was all this chemistry. Like, I'd start off in the morning with cocaine because cocaine was more powerful than coffee, and then, like, just started out. And that summer, like, I managed to work, like, 70 hours a week and go to summer school, and any spare time that I had, I was at some sort of party. And it was, I had no money because all the money that I did had went to drugs and alcohol. And I just remember I was the kind of drunk that wouldn't get into fights. I most of the time just got myself hurt because I could handle that, and I couldn't handle hurting someone else. So I spent most of that summer with, like, cuts and bruises and abrasions all over my body. You know, I wore the same outfit every day because I was homeless, and I was living on, like, the back of a boat or in a bush or in the bench in my town. And I guess, like, to explain a little bit of that, because this is, like, a pretty big part, like, when I turned 18, my parents gave me this choice that I could either live in my house or I could not live in my house. And the conditions of staying at my house was that I had to pass a drug test. And I couldn't do that, so I packed a bag. And, you know, before that, like, you know, I was grounded for essentially 4 years, and I would jump off of the two-story roof to go and get high and drunk, and then sneak back in. Like, everything in my house was, like, WD-40, like, everything was, like, unlocked, so I had, like, all these escape routes. And, you know, I thought that I was really cool. Really, it's just kind of pathetic, and most, you know, 14 to 18 year olds are not spending their time WD-40ing, like, windows so they don't squeak. But maybe you guys did too. I don't know. I mean, like, it progressed. You know, I didn't. I started living this really, really small life, and I thought that I was free. Like, that was something that I was always looking for, that was this freedom. And I thought that I had found it, you know, living by myself on the park bench and on the boat. And I found another kid that was homeless, and we hung out together on boats and just, like broke into boats and, like, slept on them and thought we were, like, a boat owner. But we weren't. and that kid actually played like a huge part in my life, because he ended up getting sober right before I did, and he still hung out with me for this like really strange reason. Like, you know, right after that summer had ended, he had ended up getting sober, and he ended up still hanging out with me and like driving me to school and like playing all these, like, he'd like get in the car and he'd be like, "You should get sober," and I'd be like, "No, I don't think that's a good idea," and he'd like play these songs in the car that like had to do with sobriety, and like it was like really weird. And he was, you know, one of the first guys that started talking to me about what Alcoholics Anonymous was, and how you could have this like belief in a higher power, and he like would explain to me that his higher power was this like Xeno warrior goddess, and which was, you know, strange. I don't know. I don't know why I'm talking about that. Right around that time, you know, I had been through inpatients and outpatients, and I had made the, well, I guess in January of 05, 06, New Year's of 05 to 06, I ended up going to an inpatient, and I didn't think I had a problem. And to backtrack, I guess, 2 years, I'd gone to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I was, you know, 16, and I ended up finding out that I had, you know, a problem drinking, because I found out that blacking out is not a normal sign of social drinking. And, you know, there's this individual in the room named Billy, and he had 3 days sober, and he ended up, like, coming up to me and, like, talking to me and explaining to me that, like, I might have a really big problem with alcoholism, and told me to pick up the big book. And then he explained to me that, like, you know, he can't tell me that he's, like, he can't diagnose me as an alcoholic, and he made an exception for me. And, you know, like, had this, like, great conversation, and, like, I don't know why I listened to him, but he told me that I was an alcoholic, and when he said that, it just clicked, and it was, like, the first thing in my life that made sense. I was, like, I get that's why I talk to individuals the way I talk to them, and that's why I, you know, constantly shit on people around me, and don't care about anyone when it comes to drugs and alcohol. Like, I will choose drugs and alcohol, those are my friends, and I don't care about you. And now I just kind of confused myself by backtracking 2 years. But from that time when I went to that first meeting to when I was inpatient, like, something drastically changed, because I would drink under the premise that I would have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous one day, and I would drink everything for that reason. By the time 2 years later I went to that inpatient, I wasn't an alcoholic. Like, I didn't have a problem. I barely drank, and I sometimes smoked pot. And I, like, played this, like, huge game that I was just, like, this, like, Bob Marley pothead. And, like, and that was okay. And totally in denial. When I left there, I ended up leaving there with a bunch of kids' numbers who introduced me to other things that I didn't do at that time, which was crack. And I didn't, you know, that wasn't my forte. I was like this, like, loving hippie. And spent the next 3 months in, like, really weird places in crack houses in Long Beach. And it was, like, really dark. You know, at that time, like from January to March, I started checking out Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and NA meetings. And one meeting in particular, this meeting out in Long Island, they saved my life. I started going there, and I always had I was a one-day kid, and I went there with one day every Saturday and Thursday night, and they told me to come back, and they told me that I shouldn't leave, and that, and I'd go in there with all these reasons. I'm too young, I can't be here, told me to look at the traditions, and in particular tradition 3, and they're like, do you have a desire to stop drinking? And I was like, well, right now I do. And they're like, good, we'll see you here Thursday. And like, then we'd have the same conversation on Thursday, and then be like, good, we'll see you here Saturday. And it was by that time in my journey, like, that was the first place that wanted me. Like, that actually showed me that they weren't kicking me out. My parents had kicked me out. I didn't feel welcome anywhere. Right before, what I consider to be like my spiritual experience, I was really trying to stay sober, and I got a sponsor, and I'd call this woman Alicia every day, something pissed me off, and I got upset, and I tried to stay sober just by myself, and I didn't call her, and I instead just stole like $100 from my parents' purse or my mom's purse, and went out on my last run, or what is to be right now my last run, I don't know what happened. And I can't explain to you why I got sober, and I can't explain to you the situation that happened that week. Getting on the train, coming back from Long Beach, back to like, where I was living at Sable, I couldn't look people in the eyes. It was like 3:30, people were coming home from work, and I had, hadn't slept in a week, and I probably hadn't eaten in a week, and I looked like death, and people stared at me strange. I ended up, and it just happened to be a Thursday night, and I ended up getting off that train and walking into Sable West, I called my sponsor right before, and then I told her that I didn't want to do this anymore, and I didn't want to drink again. I didn't want to use drugs again, and she told me that I had to go to a meeting, and she told me I had to go help make coffee. And so I went to this meeting, and I asked to make coffee, and they all told me that I shouldn't make coffee, and I should sit there. And they'd bring me coffee for the next 2 hours, and they did. They explained to me the things that I had to do in order to stay sober, and first of which they were like kind of like this weird slogan meeting where it was like everything was kept simple in that meeting. I'd come in there with like the most ridiculous, complicated situation, and they'd like make it really easy. And they're like, did you drink today? And I'm like, no. And I'm like, good, problem solved. They told me that if I wanted to stay sober, I had to at first not pick up the drink and go to meetings and do service and find a sponsor that I can talk to and start doing the steps. And at this point in time, like, I was willing to do anything. Anything people told me to do, I did. It just started the journey. I started working the steps with this woman named Alicia, and I worked steps 1, 2, and 3, where she made me write out, certain things and find out what, for the first step, like, where was my life unmanageable, how was I powerless, that summer that I told you about was a lot of my unmanageability. Like, I could understand that I was unmanageable. I couldn't really understand that I was powerless. And a lot of that had to do with ego. So I was like, I can drink more than any woman I've ever met. And how could I be powerless if I could drink so much? And it was like this bizarre, like, mind fuck. And it took me like a good month to realize that like powerless just meant like I can't drink one without, like, I can't stop after one. Like, I have to continue to go. And, you know, after one drink, all bets are off. And, you know, step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. You know, actually, it didn't, until I was like 3 years sober, did I realize that that had anything to do with, you know, a higher power. I always thought that had to do with Alcoholics Anonymous, because that was shown to me time and time again. Like, walking into these rooms, like, anything that I'm going through, like, I can become sane. As in the fact that, like, I don't have to drink. And that's, I've always found that with Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a power greater than myself that has been here for a while. And it works. And I see that work in my lives, and I see that work in everyone else's lives in this room. And that shows me that this works. And step three, turning our will and our lives over to the power of God as we understood Him. You know, this is something that has, you know, progressed in my life. The third step is something that is continually progressing in my life. And changing as I change, and it was a concept that, like, I had a lot of problems with, because I, you know, didn't believe in God when I got here, and you don't have to believe in God to stay sober. You know, and that's something that I've struggled with, and you know, I do believe in HP, and it's totally thrown off. I talked a lot about drinking. I'm sorry, guys. Which sucks. And I have to wrap it up, so I have like about a minute. And I don't know how to close this, but I don't know. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being there. I don't know. Thank you.
We've had some issues with smoking from the buildings around us, so when you go out to smoke, if you could not be in front of the surrounding buildings, just stay in front of us and make sure to keep the sidewalks clean.
Hey, I'm Megan, I'm an alcoholic.
Megan.
Hey. Welcome to Never Have We Lived Yet. In keeping with our seventh tradition, we choose that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting. We pass the basket so we can pay our rent. If you can give, please do, but if you can't, please keep coming back. We need you more than we need your money. Is there anyone here for the first time or visiting from out of town who would like to say hello?
Hello, my name is Clive, and I'm my first time in the speaking and a visiting from my place in New York.
Welcome. anniversary of a year or more in the month of March.
John Alcoholic, 4 years of 28.
Yeah, John.
My name is Bobby. I'm an alcoholic. I had 5 years on the stuff.
Alternate Delta. was the coolest committee. Maybe top second coolest.